Some styles of leadership are timeless.
Take the American president.
Like George Washington.
Or Abraham Lincoln.
Or look further back in world history.
To Augustus Caesar.
Charlemagne.
Alexander the Great.
Or even Napoleon Bonaparte.
Leaders like these sealed their historical legacy.
And are still remembered and respected today.
What differentiated them most was leadership style.
Each led with unique motivations and ideals.
This week's author dug deeper into the thought process of leaders,
applying his experience in Renaissance Italy.
So let's jump right into Niccolo Machiavelli's book, The Prince. Welcome back. You're listening to Motivation Minute, where we unravel the timeless truths in that stack of books you've been wanting to read so that you don't have to. And this week's book is The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. This was a book recommended by a listener on the Motivation Minute survey, and we actually have the listener with us. Yeah. This is Niels from the Netherlands. So welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening, guys. Well, for me at least, calling in from Germany right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I was listening to you guys on Spotify while doing my thesis, and actually was interested in reading this book as well. So I signed up for the survey, filled in a short survey, and you guys invited me to be on the show, and I'm glad to be here. So looking forward to my first ever podcast.
Thanks for doing the survey and coming on the show. It's awesome to talk with someone internationally.
Yeah, especially the survey part, because we have, you know, several listeners, but we don't get to hear from many of them. And it makes a big difference to actually talk to them and say, hey, how are the books impacting you? So that's really cool. You took the time to fill that out.
I hope I wasn't too harsh on you guys during the survey.
No, you were awesome. It was great feedback.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, it was. I liked it.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
So welcome. And so this, you brought up this book, which was The Prince.
Yes.
It's basically by this guy in Renaissance Italy, who was, I guess, an advisor to the leadership. Do you know more details on the background of it?
Basically, the book was written by Niccolo Machiavelli after he was advisor to the Borgia family. But then they kind of died in unhappy circumstances, from what I got from the book and the history behind it. So he was nothing, because he had his title, he had his prestige. He was a smart guy, but he didn't particularly like the church, which was not really a good thing back in Italy at that time. There was one guy, Lorenzo de Medici, who he saw value in, that like he could be the next great leader to unify Italy. And he wrote this book. It's now a book, more like a letter as a gift to Lorenzo to show, okay, other people are giving you lavish gifts like gold and myrrh and whatever, for example. And
I'm going to give you wisdom.
He gave him wisdom, and that is also maybe a good mindset, giving people advice like this instead of just giving them extravagant gifts that they can't really do much with. Yeah.
What's interesting about this book is, you know, the layout, it's got pretty much, it talks about like how to deal with the political, I guess, style back then, which was very different, because you have dynasties and it's kind of like dictators today a little bit, in a sense. But talking to like how you would be as a prince and what leadership qualities you need to succeed in a politically savage landscape is
very
kind of
divided. Yeah.
Lesson.
And of course, how you use your personal skills for that, and how you react to change mostly. That's what the gist of the book is, how to react to different changes that are happening around you. And
So it was written in this, in a time in history of like political, you know, all this stuff that was going on, but these like the principles can be used in anyone's life, right?
Yeah.
To like become a more mature person or more powerful person, more self-developed. Is that kind of the principles in the book? Maturity and like, you know, how to psychologically, how to be at a different level or understanding the principles, right?
A lot of it was like seeing leadership from two sides of the coin, because you have the leader and you have the people. And one of the things that I read early in the book that I really liked was, to understand the nature of the people, one needs to be a prince, Similarly, to understand princes, one needs to be of the people.
Yeah.
Because it's so true. Communication to understand the other side is important, but then you understand what they're motivated by, which completely changes the way you look at, you might think of as a prince as evil in some cases, but if you understood what's in their head and what they're dealing with compared to what your level is, there might be a way you can find some compromise or similarities.
Yeah. You can take that to the business world as well. For example, being with the people, for example, you work at a very large corporation as a CEO and you have the people on the ground doing the factory work, for example, and they're complaining like, oh, management did this because of that. And then because you're in management, you don't see their perspective. And maybe management isn't listening to you, not just because they don't want to listen to you or they're just too ignorant to listen to you. But it's a level of respect thing. There's like a power distance between you and management.
Yeah.
And I think one of the notes from the book, and I have it written down here, I think it says that you should take advice from other people or you ask for advice, not necessarily just listen to everyone. Just take advice from people you think are smart enough to take advice from. Yeah.
Right. And I think I remember this part too, where he's like, don't actually use all the advice because you'll get tangled in so many conflicting things.
Yeah.
But the person who's wise can take advice and then figure out with his own mind what to do based on those ideas.
Yes, indeed. Wow. And that's one of the things you can use in daily life as well. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Just not long ago, I realized that I don't have to take in or believe or use all the advice that I get, even if it's from someone who I respect. I may disagree with them and I might say, wow, I don't need to use that, because I'm the type of person that will just listen to anybody and just keep asking questions and almost let people take advantage of me, and I'm just like too open, I guess. So it's, don't always just be the one asking questions, and because you're almost in the, when you do that, I guess you're being the you're not being in control, you're not being the leader, because you're like asking and you're asking and not actually,
you're always on the receiving end.
And you're not making the decisions, because you're making decisions based on what others are saying. So you're not deciding yourself. You're just choosing from three options. And then, I might just go with this one. But it's not because you think that that is the best idea. It's just the best out of the options that was given to you.
So the hard thing is, like, we're stuck with, when you're early in a career, you're often listening for advice. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the advice yet. You're not the guy who's overflowing with everything to be understood. But there's that trade-off of like maybe earlier on you're listening more. Later on you're giving advice. But I wonder if the author here is saying that you want to listen less, like, or listen just enough to get the advice that's enough for what you need and then act, versus only listen or only give advice. There's kind of a middle ground.
Yeah, listen to the people who know what they're talking about and not just everyone who has an opinion. Uh-huh. And I think that's also what Jiraiya said about feeling like easily overrun or something by other people's opinions. And that's also the mindset of Machiavelli that I got from the book. It's like, everyone's evil, everyone's out to get you, and you have to like distinguish which people are trying to help you to help themselves, and which people are trying to help you to help themselves, but also help you. And that's the advice you should listen to. Something that also helps you further, so you can stay above them. And
where it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's like a win-win situation.
Yeah, because like I find myself doing this, but I've seen other people do it, or I know this is the thing where you want to help somebody to gain validation from them. And you're only helping yourself. You know, you're feeling good, you're unconsciously being very selfish in the way you help them. It seems like you're being this nice person, but then later they expect something, or they don't actually care for you.
Yeah.
That can be a huge problem. And my problem is just maybe being too trusting sometimes.
I have the same problem. Yeah. That's why the book was like a little close to the heart. It said, don't trust everyone. Don't just believe everything everyone says to you, but also do your own research and come up with your own opinion.
Right. I've got a similar too. I tend to listen more than I speak. And so I start to trust people more than maybe is good. Yeah. But so the book brought up about, like, there's no formula for success.
No.
Because that it's going to be like you may have a cautious person versus someone who's hasty, or someone who uses force versus skill, or patience or impatience. But it's somewhere in the middle with both of those, or using like caution and skill versus caution and force. Like there's different combinations you can do because, you know, Niels, you and I might both be listeners or both be cautious, but we're going to have varying degrees of success, even though we use the same formula like that.
Yeah.
And the book is like to avoid, you know, you can be successful today, but you might be ruined tomorrow without anything changing in your attitude or character. It's just because you didn't adapt your strategy.
Yeah.
And so it's using that strategically.
Also, that's one of the parts where he talks about Borgia, because he passed away early, and he said, yes, he could be the man who unified Italy. He had all the skills. He did everything right. But then suddenly he got sick or something, or he got assassinated. I'm not sure. And then he just died early before he could achieve what he was able to achieve. So even if you do everything right, it can still go wrong, but it's not always your fault. Sometimes it's just external factors that you don't have control over. So there's no perfection. And I think that's also what nowadays everyone's trying to achieve. Everyone wants to have that amazing lifestyle, but also have a great family and also be able to go on holiday how many times a year. You can't do everything perfectly. Something's going to go wrong sometime. And if you're able to adapt to that, that's good. And if you're not, then you're going to be, well, crushed. Your empire crumbles.
I've heard a quote. It says, in order to be stable, you have to change because stable is always changing, or something like that. It's like you have to... You have to be very adaptive, and you can't just use one method. So there's no, you know, formula, like you were saying, because there's always going to be, in different situations, different skills have to be used. You know, we all have natural strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes our strengths are good for the situation, sometimes they're not. So like becoming a, you know, a quote prince, you have to become balanced, or you have to, like, and if you're going to be in a leadership position, you have to know when to use what, and it's and that only comes from a lot of experience, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's one thing that I would say a formula is useful for, and it's a foundation. Like the book brought this example up of how if you don't lay a solid foundation first, you still can do it later, but it's going to be a lot more hasty. It's going to cause trouble for whoever's designing it and be dangerous in the end to the building because you didn't do it up front. That's one thing where a formula is key. I'm in software. There's this law. I forget who wrote it, but it's that if you don't plan ahead, a project is going to take you 3 times longer than you think it will. But if you plan ahead with adequate design work, it's only going to take twice as long as you thought. So it's a little bit pessimistic, but the funny thing is that foundation is key.
Yeah, it is a good example of, for example, if you want to start a business, you have to think ahead of what you're going to do. That's the whole reason things like a business plan were thought of. And I know most entrepreneurs will say, yeah, I don't need a business plan. I'll just go ahead and do it. Thinking is not my thing.
Try it.
But then you do need to be very good at adapting to situations, because you're going to run into stuff when you don't think about it ahead, where you're like, oh, I should have really done that differently. That cost me either so much money or so much time to fix. Like starting up a web shop, and then like a month later, you completely redesign everything because it's just not what I like. It's just not working.
Mm-hmm.
So your opinion is have a plan up front as much as possible. Like, have you seen that work with, you know, so you run like an e-commerce business, right?
Yeah. Just a side thing, because I'm also a student, so I don't have like full time for it, and just a little bit of extra income. But it's also mainly a place where I can put my education and my ideas into practice to see if it works. And if it works, then okay, I'll scale it up, put some more money in it, and it grows. And if it doesn't, then, well, I lost $50 and I'll try something new. Yeah.
So with that, you've definitely got planning, because you're applying what you've been learning into the business.
Yeah.
Like, how does it work with what you do? Do you have examples of like where planning up front makes a huge difference versus, you know, just winging it?
Actually, when I first started a web shop, it was with one of my friends, and I'm currently running the one with him as well. But the first time we did it, we didn't think of anything. We didn't We didn't put money aside for it because we just thought like, oh, we'll get some money from somewhere and we'll buy stuff anyway. It's just very naive. Also, we didn't set up a bank account to get money transferred to. Also, just really dumb, using our personal bank accounts and PayPal and stuff like that. We didn't apply at the Chamber of Commerce, which is like to pay taxes in the Netherlands. So basically, we're running an illegal company. So all of those things, that is just like common sense. We were so eager to jump into it that we made all of those mistakes, and that cost us money. We had to shut the store down because, you know, we were running it illegally. After some thought, we figured out, yeah, maybe we should just not do that. And then we redesigned it and came up with a new idea, and we actually did it step by step this time. And it's working better. It's taking longer. We still have to invest money, of course, and invest time. But right now, we don't have to redo everything. So it's a trade-off. If you're good at adapting and if you're good at doing things on the fly, you think of everything on the fly, then it's fine. But for me, planning is definitely better.
So you're talking about, so I had a similar thing come up because as a software engineer, I had to work on this script last spring where they gave me like a couple weeks to finish it up. And they said, hey, it's basically done, but we think it works, but make it work better or make it, you know, so it doesn't have errors. Well, there was a lot of errors in this script. And I realized only months after I started working on it, the complexity of how deep the errors were. And I started putting band-aids on the script that made it worse because I was trying to contain the errors versus actually solve the root problem, which had I taken that time might have been better, but I didn't know how deep I was. But we didn't plan, so I'm just like winging it, trying to say, hey, what can I fix now? Oh, that didn't work. I made it worse, but you know, it's, or I made it more complex, but at least it works. But you don't want it complex. You want it simple. So it's like this whole trade-off, like you're saying.
Yeah. That's a great example of like the two sides, because it's you need, like, that's my biggest struggle too, is planning, is not, or not planning, because I did the same thing when I started my business. You know, I didn't do a lot of the legal stuff and taxes, and I didn't have any accounting software and lots of stuff like that, and we're still struggling with trying to plan, and we're just trying to figure out how do we actually plan projects and stuff. Anyway, you know, so that's like my weakness. Now, I know some people who are naturally really good at planning, and I would say over plan, or like, I think it's something to do with, you know, like they say, we'll either be on one side or the other, and you can't just use one thing. You can't just be overly planning and never be able to adapt in the moment, but you also can't just be too easygoing and not plan ahead of time. So it's like an example of, you have to learn how to do both, but but we're not naturally good at both. It seems like we're only naturally good at like one or the other.
But you can always, that's one takeaway that isn't really from the book, but it's just my personal perspective. You can always learn. I mean, you can practice it. You're going to have to put in the hours if you're not a natural talent. But I believe that you can train it a little bit, and putting in those hours should hopefully, it's like an investment. You're investing time to save time in the end. So
And you'll save some time, but it won't be as much time as you would anticipate saving because there's natural things that take longer than they should. So switching gears a little bit, what if we jump to this test that Niels had us do before we get on the show? It's called the Machiavelli exam. It's
Mac
got like 20 questions, I think.
Yeah.
We'll jump into the context of it later, but we should just like give our scores so we know what it is. So I know I got a 69 out of 100 on it. Jiraiya got 53.
Oh, yeah.
And what did you get?
I think it was 72. So that was
72. So we're highest. Neck and neck right there.
Yeah.
I'm way behind.
So,
which isn't
a low score isn't bad in this test. I'm trying to figure out what the test means, but here's the gist of what I got out of it. It's like a scale of empathy versus apathy. Sort of.
Yeah.
A little bit like that.
Yeah.
So the author of The Prince, Niccolo Machiavelli, was kind of two-sided. He would talk about how, you know, you should be generous, but to a point. Or something else he said was, you should appear merciful and faithful and kind, but in reality, you can use the opposite qualities where you deem fit sparingly.
Wow.
So a little bit like it's a trade-off. And my thought is 100 is you are fully this guy.
Yeah. You're
not fully the prince.
Yeah, you don't like people and you think everyone is out to get you, but at least you are able to anticipate it and like help yes. yourself to the top.
It's like you're basically super politically tuned, but in a negative sense where you will give anything to be politically at the top.
That's what being Machiavellian is. It's whatever means necessary. So
okay, then anything. The opposite end is where you think the best of everybody, and you don't think anything negative about people, and you assume that being generous is great and that you can always be a positive person. And so I was a 69. I think the reason is that I always have this like wanting to be savvy about how I handle situations, and like, so I like to optimize things is the best way to put it, I think.
Yeah,
because I'm always looking for the best way to get to the answer, which might mean that it bends the rules as the rules are accepted, but it is the best way in my perspective.
And to get to the answer. Some other people won't like it. That's also,
And that might throw some people because I'm not tuned into them. I mean, that's why the score was that way for me. Jiraiya, what do you think?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think that, I think that you are better at what you said about, you know, just figuring out how the best way to do that, even if it might not make everybody feel good, or just being more practical. And whereas I guess a lower score, which is what I got, means you're more trusting or something, or more like,
or you're trustworthy as a person. Like, I am less trustworthy than you are according to this score.
Yeah. Oh, really? Right. Trustworthy. But also I could be more gullible or more prone to being taken advantage of, because I'm not, you know, I am that way, I think, sometimes to a fault, where it's like, I'm too, you know, quote, nice, where I should be just a little more direct and not as, you know, believing or something.
Yeah.
But it means that you're more tuned into how people are thinking. You're more empathetic with them, which is valuable from a communication sense. That's something I wish I was, because I could read people better if I had that.
Yeah. I think one thing that's like a good example of how different your background is as well, because I did this test in my business school as well. That's how I know the test. We had to do the test, and it was with an international class. So there were people from Russia, the US, countries in South America, Asia, Europe. So all over the world, basically. And you do notice that the countries who are considered more authoritarian and more individualistic, for example, like Russia, they scored even higher than they scored like in the 80s and 90s, most of them.
Whoa.
And
really,
then there were more like the empathetic people from like the Southern American countries who were more like about family, and they like they're not so individualistic. They're think more of like the group than as one person, and they had lower scores because they like to be with people and they like to help people to get to their goals. And even if that doesn't mean that their own goals can be achieved, but it's because they see it as like a family, it's like a pack.
Interesting. Yeah. What do you think for your score? So you got like a 72, I think you said.
Yeah.
What do you think? Was that influenced by your nationality mostly, or do you think it's who you are also just different than your nationality?
I think the Dutch are quite individualistic, like on the Hofstede scale. There's like a Hofstede, Geert Hofstede, he did research all around the world within IBM companies on different nationalities, power distance as well. You should also read up on that if you're interested in stuff like that. I think it's also just part of just me being me. You've experienced stuff in your life and you're like, I don't want that to happen again. So you get a bit like harsher to other people.
Yeah.
Because if you get scammed a few times, for example, when I traveled abroad, and I got scammed, I felt like, I just hated.
You're less trusting of people.
Because I just felt, how did I fall for this? Like, And then you get wary of everyone in that country, even though it was just one person.
Right. That's the thing about this score. So like for you and me, we are less trusting of people around us. Jiraiya is more trusting. But so maybe that works out sometimes. Other times it doesn't, because we need to be more trusting with certain people.
Yeah.
Well, pretty amazing what you can learn from a book from the early 1500s.
Yeah.
That the leadership style principles can still work today.
Yeah.
And to see leadership in the two-sided context of, you know, you can be a leader on either extreme, but if you can somehow be in the middle and use either side strategically, that's better than just leaning one hard direction. That's one of the things I really get out of this book. Yeah. Really liked it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm good to hear it. It's good to hear that you guys liked it. And I hope the listeners liked it as well, because I really enjoyed the book and I'm glad I have it in my bookcase now. The hard copy that I got, definitely worth it. It looks beautiful.
That's cool.
So if the listeners can buy that one, then definitely do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and also, if you have a book you want to get featured on the podcast, all you got to do is go to our survey, like Niels did. It's at motivationminute.com, and you tap survey. And just tell us what book you want us to feature, like we did here with The Prince. And then you could even come on, like Niels did. So thanks for coming on, Niels.
Thank you very much, guys, for the invitation. And I hope everyone enjoyed. I certainly did. And maybe until next time for another book. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where can people find you online?
Where can people find me online? I don't really have an online presence for that. So maybe I'll give a link to you guys for the web shop. And then maybe
cool.
You can put that
cool.
on. Yeah.
We'd love to feature that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Cool.
So thanks again. And thank you for listening. Tap subscribe if you haven't already. And we'd love to show up in your feed every week. And we'll see you next week.